Ramayana, Ayodhya Kanda, Part 13. Having resided at Chitrakuta for 3 months, Ram was passing his time with Sita, sitting on a big rock at the foot of the hill. Ram was describing to Sita the various roots that the rishis ate, and pointed out the varieties of trees, flowers, and wild animals that abounded there. Ram always tried his best to please Sita and divert her mind from the grief of living in exile. And while speaking to Sita, Ram pointed out to the river Mandakini, which was adorned with beautiful flowers and which served as the sporting ground for swans, cranes, and other exotic birds. Oh, dear Sita, truly, there is no reason for us to be aggrieved, for we are residing together in this lovely place. And it was just at this time that Ram noticed the dust being raised by Bharata's army coming in the far distance. Soon, Ram could hear the noises of the wild animals that were fleeing out of fear. And at this, Ram turned to Lakshmana. Whatever is raising the dust is frightening the forest animals. Go, find out at once what is causing this disturbance, my dear brother Lakshmana. Lakshman then climbed a tall tree, and from there he could see the large army approaching. With great urgency, Lakshman called down to Ram, immediately, put out the fire, for a great army is approaching. Hide Sita within the cave and gather our weapons. We must prepare to meet them. O Lakshman, look out to see their chariot flags, so that we may know whose army is coming. By the insignias, Lakshman recognized that it was his brother's army, and so he shouted out to Ram, "It is Bharat! He must be coming to kill us, so that he can be assured of enjoying unrivaled sovereignty. Indeed, they are approaching with great enthusiasm. We must make ready immediately, taking our bows to fight with them from the top of the hill. I think this is our good fortune, for now we can fight with the very person who has caused our misfortune and suffering. We should not hesitate to kill Bharat outright. Afterwards, I shall take pleasure in killing Kaikeyi along with all of her relatives, just to purge the earth of the sins she has committed. Oh, my brother, check your rage. For you see, Bharata is coming here in great eagerness to see me. What then is the necessity of bows and arrows? My opinion is that Bharat has come to offer me the kingdom. However, if you wish to kill Bharat, so that you may enjoy the royal throne yourself, then say so, and I will tell Bharat to hand it over to you peacefully." Being thus admonished by Ram, Lakshman hung his head in shame. "Oh, I was hoping our father had come to see us. However, since his familiar elephant is visible, although bereft of its usual white umbrella, I do not think he has come." Lakshman then climbed down from the tree and returned to the cottage with Ram and Sita. At this time, Bharat entered the forest surrounding Chitrakuta Mountain. When Bharat again spotted the column of smoke, he proceeded in that direction, hoping it would lead to Ram's cottage. As Bharata hastened there, Guha, Shatrughna, and others followed, while Vasishtha brought the three mothers. Finally, Bharata came to a clearing in the forest and saw the cottage with the gold-plated bows of Ram and Lakshman, with a sacrificial altar in front. When Bharata saw Ram, he rushed forward with tears in his eyes, crying out, "Oh, Ram, how painful it is seeing you with matted hair and clothing made of tree bark, and your lotus feet pricked by the thorns in the forest. It is certainly my fault that you cannot enjoy the royal comforts you are accustomed to, and instead must endure these hardships in the jungle." Coming forward to touch Ram's feet, Bharata suddenly fainted and fell to the ground. But Ram quickly lifted him up and was disturbed to see that Bharata was also wearing tree bark. After embracing Shatrughna, who had also fallen at his feet, Ram embraced Sumantra and Guha. Then Ram took Bharat on his lap. "Oh, my dear brother, why have you come here, leaving our father alone and unattended? Please tell me about our mothers and the citizens of Ayodhya. Are they well and happy?" Ram then inquired from Bharata in such a way that was instructive to everyone present. "My dear Bharata, please know that a righteous kingdom will surely prosper. So are the Brahmanas, elders, and demigods being properly respected? Are the women within the kingdom honored and protected? Are disputes being impartially judged? Oh, I hope you are avoiding the 14 weaknesses of a king: atheism, hypocrisy, anger, procrastination, laziness, slavery to the senses, contempt for good advice, lack of vigilance, fondness for bad counsel, impractical planning, the inability to keep a secret, attachment for foolish friends, and negligence of religious observances, and the failure to counteract enemies. My dear Bharat, are you aware of the three kinds of prowess: energy, authority, intelligence? And do you avoid the four types of bad company: the gossipers, the foul mouth, the usurper of property, and the unjust? Do you avoid making alliances with these 16 kings: the child monarch, the senile, the frail and ill, those who have been overthrown, the overly aggressive, the cowardly, the greedy, the sensualist, the frivolous, those who are defeated in battle, those who frequently travel abroad, those with many enemies, those who are poverty-stricken, those who are opposed to religious principles, and those who are despised by their ministers, as well as those who are mentally disturbed? Oh, Bharat, I hope you prefer to keep the company of just one learned man rather than thousands of ignorant fools. One talented minister can give one immense benefit, whereas in times of necessity, thousands of fools can do nothing. If a king does not get rid of a physician who simply is adept at aggravating a disease, or a servant who is intent upon bringing disgrace to his master, or a warrior who wants to become ruler himself, then all of these will surely kill the king. And are the women being protected and honored by you? Are they pacified with regard to their material needs? I hope that you do not place too much faith in women or confide your secrets to them. While observing Bharata's matted hair and forest clothing, Ram could understand that Bharata had accepted these austerities out of love for him. Thus, after again embracing Bharata, Ram inquired, "O my dear brother, why have you relinquished the throne, coming to the forest dressed as a mendicant?" "O Ram, my mother's intrigues were carried out without my knowledge, and I know you are the rightful heir. Thus I implore you to return to Ayodhya and take up the rule of the kingdom. Practically the whole of Ayodhya has come to a standstill, for everyone is morose because of your absence." While making his impassioned plea, Bharata held the lotus feet of Sri Ram, placing them on his head. Ram then picked up Bharat. "I know you took no part in banishing me to the forest, but still, I have no desire to gain the throne by sinful means. Oh, my brother, you should not condemn your mother or the king, for they were both acting within the bounds of propriety. Indeed, elders are free to do as they like with their dependents. Therefore, you should accept the royal throne and rule the kingdom. That was the desire of our father, and I am determined to spend 14 years in the forest, for I consider father's order to be the supreme religious principle." "O Ram, in the presence of an elder prince, no one else can become the king. Therefore, you must come back to Ayodhya and sit upon the royal throne after offering water to the departed soul of our father." When he heard of his father's death, Ram immediately fainted to the ground. Only when Sita, Lakshman and Shatrughna sprinkled water on Ram's body did he regain consciousness. Then, after tearfully lamenting the loss of his father, Ram declared, "Oh, now I shall never return to Ayodhya." Although he appeared to lament like an ordinary man, in truth, Ram always remained transcendental. The Lord, his body, and his pastimes are never ordinary or material. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna proclaims that simply by understanding the transcendental nature of his appearance, activities, and disappearance, one can become liberated from the cycle of birth and death. Lord Krishna himself displayed a similar reaction when informed by the demon Shalva that his father Vasudeva had been killed. And at that time, Krishna almost fell unconscious out of grief. So, why do Lord Ram and Lord Krishna appear at times to be bewildered, although they are both the same Supreme Personality of Godhead? Lamentation and bewilderment characterize a conditioned soul. So how can they be present in God, who is full in all opulences, including knowledge and power? And so, this is a controversial point. Factually, the Lord is never misled or illusioned. When playing the role of a human being, God presents himself as a complete human being, exhibiting all the emotions of an ordinary man. All great sages who render the Lord transcendental loving service are liberated from the bodily conception of life. So, how could the Lord himself fall under illusion? Clearly, God's grief is but another opulence, another facet of his supreme, unlimited, and inconceivable personality. Thereafter, Ram went to the banks of the Mandakini Ganga with his brothers and Sumantra to offer water for the benefit of their father. Then, upon returning to his cottage atop Chitrakuta Mountain, Ram clasped the hands of his brothers, and all four of them wailed in grief. This loud sound reverberated throughout the valley. When Bharata's army heard the sound, they became aggrieved, for they knew it to be the brothers' lamentation for their departed father. All of the soldiers then rushed toward the sound, for they too were anxious to see Ram. And when they reached the cottage, the warriors greeted Ram with tears in their eyes, and in turn, Ram welcomed each of them according to their respective positions. Meanwhile, while keeping the three widows of King Dasharatha in front, Vasistha hastened to see Ram. When Vasistha and the widows arrived at the banks of the Mandakini Ganga, they saw the remnants of articles used as an offering by Ram for his departed father. Kaushalya was pained to see that the only food Ram had at his disposal for an offering was the pulp of a forest fruit. Kaushalya considered this unworthy for her husband, and with some amusement she thought, this is the truth of the adage that deities a man worships have to partake of the same food upon which the man himself subsists. So when Vasistha and the three widows arrived at Ram's cottage, they were distressed to see him. Ram looked like a demigod who had fallen from heaven. Ram quickly stood up and went to touch the feet of his mothers. Then, as he bowed before them, the three women wiped the dust from Ram's back. And likewise, with tears in their eyes, Sita and Lakshman touched the feet of the three mothers. Kaushalya embraced Sita, while Ram approached Vasistha to touch his feet. Ram then sat down with his preceptor, as others also came around them. Bharat then told Ram, I want to return the kingdom of Kosala to you. Although everyone present applauded this proposal, Ram replied, My dear Bharata, in this material world, no one can act independently. Under the control of eternal time, everything ultimately meets with defeat. Thus, no wise man should lament for the reversals in one's life. Union only ends in separation, for as pieces of driftwood float together and then disperse, family and society meet briefly and then depart for their separate destinations. Just as solid pillars gradually decay, causing a house to collapse, a man totters into old age and finally meets death. As a river cannot return to its source, everyone must follow the path of one's father and forefathers. So why should one mourn for others when he himself is also dying? A man's skin becomes wrinkled, then his hair turns gray. What can he do? A man rejoices when the sun rises, and rejoices also when it sets, not thinking that at the same time he has died a little more. O Bharata, a sober and learned person should utilize one's energy for following religious principles in order to attain a higher destination after death. So there is no need to lament for our father, for he has given up an old body in order to attain heavenly happiness. O Bharat, you must return to Ayodhya at once and execute our father's order. I will remain here to carry out Dasarath's will. But Ram, Our noble father had become too infatuated with women in his old age. Why indeed? He seemed to confirm the popular notion that at the time of death, one invariably becomes obsessed by something. Therefore, my dear brother, you should undo that harm which father caused due to his obsession and return to Ayodhya. For you are a Kshatriya, and your duty is to act as a ruler, not as a hermit. You are a householder, the noblest of the four ashrams. So why are you abandoning the duties of family life? If you refuse to return to Ayodhya, then so shall I. I will remain here in the forest with you, just like Lakshman. Dear Bharata, you are wrongly criticizing our father, saying that he was impelled by lusty attachment for Kaikeyi. But at the time of Dasharatha's marriage to her, her father made him promise that her son would succeed him as emperor. So Bharat, please go back to Ayodhya now in order to keep our father's promise intact. You must take the responsibility of ruling the kingdom, even if only for my sake.